It's a very prominent family that you all know. Okay, today is Sunday morning, the 24th of December, 2017. I want to say hello to all my students in front of me and to all those listening across the world. First of all, I want to mention that today is my mother's yard site, and I celebrated this morning half Litvak, half Chassid. The Litvashe half, we said that, but we were a little high at the time. The Litvashe half was, I made a siyum. The Chassidishe half was, I gave a hilula, what they call a collation, it should be. Everyone says a kiddush. So we celebrated two ways. But I want to tell you something about a mother, and she's gone 6 years already, a very admirable personality. Had Aricha German Tovin, died at 98. But I want to show you, I always say that the connection between a mother and a child is much deeper than the connection between a child and a father. The connection between a mother and child begins with birth, begins 9 months before, actually. But a father, the Rav, I'm quoting the Rav now, you can see this in Family Redeemed, but life experience teacher. A father, later in life, you can talk, I spoke, I have grandchildren that are my age already, very intelligent, and I can have very serious talks with them. But there's no question, the mother, it's from embryo. So last Shabbos, we had a big affair in Ranana. I was Meisa Nefesh, it's not easy for me, not easy for Malka. But, you know, I spoke six different times, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, people so anxious to hear. And a big affair for Shvatami, which was very successful. We had a banquet at night that was the most beautiful banquet I ever attended. The theme was Talmud and Rebbe. It was around your humble servant and this particular Talmud that I brought back to Yiddishkeit, and he's very prominent in the community. So I want to just share with you one little thought. Here, this is the copy of the journal. Anyone who wants it can take it afterwards. And you'll see I wrote on it notes as I heard. I always like to be the last speaker at such an affair because then I can comment on what was said before me and tie it together properly. And it was very successful. A guy heard me, wrote a check for $10,000, another one, not such a wealthy guy, $2,000 a day. Okay, so now I have the journal. And I look at it, and I have to be honest with you, my kids aren't interested, my wife isn't interested. And I said to myself, you won't believe it, I got to give it to my mother. And then I realized, you got to give it to your mother is gone. But that's indicative of the relationship. Zichrona Levracha. What's left behind here is the fifth generation is beyond words already. We'll hit 100 soon. Between myself and my brother, Be'ezrat Hashem. I want to dedicate this shiur today in memory of Rabbi Aaron Steinman. And you don't know, I mean, not only was he a Litvish Talmud Chacham, but there was a certain broadness to him that we don't find elsewhere in the Litvish belt today. The fact that he had to run away to Switzerland in very formative years, he learned with Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was a first cousin to Moriah Rebbe, to the Rav. It's a son of a different brother of Rav Chaim's children. In other words, my Moriah Rebbe is the son of Rav Moshe, the second child of Rav Chaim Brisker, and this is a son of another son who was younger, who later lived in Warsaw, if I'm not mistaken, and Rav Moshe and the Rav were first cousins, and Rav Moshe was the first great Talmud Chacham, and he really was the great influence. They learned together, and Rav Steinman absorbed a great deal. But if you want to see what there are two pictures of Rav Steinman that are in the internet. And these pictures say it all. One picture is Rav Steinman with his wife the day of their marriage at the table. He's clean shaven with a big smile. He's telling her a story, a joke or whatever. And just one of the boys, I would say. And this is why Rav Moshe is very upset. Remember I showed you years ago the Masoret Moshe. I have a student who dedicates his life to insisting a Jew must have a beard. If you don't have a beard, you are not a good Jew. He's published again. I have material here he sent me. But Reb Moshe was very angry with him. You know what Reb Moshe said? You mean that you have to have a beard in Slabatki Yeshiva and in Kelsh Yeshiva and in Mir Yeshiva? All the students didn't have beards until they were married or went into the rabbinate, and you're saying they have to have beards? And here's a picture of Rav Steinman, if you can see it, beardless. But the other picture says it all. It's Rav, hold on one second, it's Rav Steinman lighting Hanukkah candles, simple menorah, the type we all use with oil, unbelievable, standing on a ladder or a little chair to reach the menorah outside his house, and there's the Sat Meruv. I don't know if that's Rabarin or Reb Zalman, I think it's Rabarin, but anyway, look at that silver candelabra, and these pictures, one against the other, illustrate two completely different worlds together. Yitzchak, his adjective to Tzahal was positive. But learning, Yitzchak, one of the basic lessons that the Rav taught me, Moreinu v'Rabbeinu, is there many hashkafot? We have a certain hashkafa that's very good for us. I can prove my hashkafa 100 times over. Nevertheless, I recognize there can be a Chabatnik has a different hashkafa, can be a Painovich, as long as he's a good, positive Jew. And his attitude towards Sahal, if not from they hate him with the, you know what's going on. You saw they ripped off posters, they destroyed the monument on his grave. Because of him, we have Nachal Haredi, so please. He came a long way from the isolation of those who totally opposed the army, and Jews will tell you, intelligent people who know Shas will tell you, why do we need an army? The Ribbono Shel Olam will save us. You understand? Okay, no comment necessary.
All right, now a question. Why is it that the Soloveitchik family has this quirk that they reuse? It's almost as if there's no other names in the book. They reuse the same names. So anybody who wants to write a biography, they say that the Rav's father was
with Moshe Soloveitchik.
The Rav's cousin was with
Moshe Soloveitchik.
And there's a Yosef Soloveitchik today living in Israel.
All I will tell you is that the one name they didn't reuse was Eliyahu. And everyone asked how Rabban Soloveitchik named his, Moshe Eliyahu, second son Eliyahu. Only Rabban would do that. Do you know why they didn't use Eliyahu? It's the Vilna Gaon. How don't you use Eliyahu? Because Reb Chaim had a brother, Eliyahu Soloveitchik, who became way off the path. Try to combine Yiddishkeit with Christianity, wrote Sfarim, and no one wanted to perpetuate that name. Reb Aaron Soloveitchik told me, this I heard with my own ears, that he visited Los Angeles and a descendant of Eliyahu popped up, and Reb Aaron told me he's a shtickel of Baal Tshuva. He totally identifies with the Jewish people and a shtickel frumkeit, not obviously a lamdin, but the name Eliyahu they didn't use. But okay, that's in families. It's not like us. All my grandchildren have names that I can barely pronounce. Whoever heard of a kid named Roey, you understand? Adiyah, whoever heard of these names? It's a new world today. It's Israel. Alma with an aleph, not with the hay. Alma with an aleph.
Jewish Druids.
Okay, so Baruch Hashem. All right, let's roll. Gentlemen, nothing that excites me more than teaching Torah, and there's a gentleman here from Australia who hit the nail on the head with what I want to start with. Today I want to be more intimate with Reb Aaron, but the last lecture, Jacob, if you recall, I portrayed Reb Aaron Kotler's life, and I am happy to see you. At least some young men have intellectual curiosity. And Reb Aaron's life, you have to ask, why did they bring him to America? There were other Rosh Yeshiva, more famous. Reb Aaron was 47, 48. He was a youngster yet. You see, in the yeshivish world, you become famous when you turn 70. Today, you can't even open your mouth before you turn 90. You understand? That's the yeshivish world today. Baruch Hashem, we live longer. I've suddenly reached the milestone, so I don't want to mention what's being said behind my back. Baruch Hashem, I'm very proud, I'm very happy to hear it. But nevertheless, it's only because you survived many years. So why did they bring Reb Aaron? And that's what I ended off last week's shiur. Reb Aaron, everyone felt he had so much strength. He was totally in motion. He's not older. When you get older, you don't have that strength. You have to, mitzakt in Yiddish, menschaf, zhalavim de koichus. It's a beautiful expression in Yiddish. Yeah, how would you translate it? You have to manage. You can't be all over. Like last, you have to work it out that you're using your kochot properly. But klach the Yiddish, zhalavim de koichus.
That's a Russian term.
Good. You got it, Herb. We all speak jargon. You speak Hebrew, you also speak a jargon. Yaleh, you know, you throw in a balagan. These are Arab words, but today it's part of the Hebrew language. So this is why they chose Reb Aaron, because they felt that Reb Aaron could save many more Jews. If they brought someone in his 70s, a Gaon Adir with Svarim, published, everyone knows the name, but it wouldn't be the same like Reb Aaron. And here I just want to quote to you Dr. Shmuel Schmidt. I just returned to Kovna from Yanova, where the Kletzky Yeshiva is now located. This is when everyone ran away to the Vilna area. Reb Aaron Cutler's the Rosh Yeshiva there. He is indeed a most interesting person and considered the greatest Talmudic master of anyone in his age range. He is about 48 years old, with blue smiling eyes, of small stature, powerful determination, and penetrating vision. So here we have Reb Aaron, and he comes to the United States. And there's no two ways about it. You can list out names. I say the two people that, or three people that caused the greatest revolution in the United States were Reb Aaron Cutler, Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Do you have others that played a big role? Reb Moshe Feinstein, the Safmaruv, but that really caused the revolution. There's no question about it. There wouldn't be a modern orthodoxy today if not for the Rav. What Lubavitch is beyond words. It's a worldwide movement of concern and care for every Jew in the world. Pshuto kamashmo'o. And of course, Reb Aaron with the level of Torah learning. Now, I want to just mention his relationship to Yeshiva University, and then I'll come into my own relationship with Reb Aaron. I write about him in Bernard Revel, and here the story is one of a kind. And I have to give you a drop of background. YU, Rabbi Revel, always suffered from an inferiority complex. You know, he establishes this yeshiva in America, and anyone from Europe, the Europeish, come to America to raise funds, and we'll get involved with this in the Monday class. It's going to be very fascinating material once we go back to our regular classes. So they would visit America, and they would look at Yeshiva University. When I say Yeshiva University, I'm committing an anachronism. It's Yeshiva and Yeshiva College at the time. But if I say Yeshiva, Yeshiva College, I'm saying YU al Shem Ha'atid. You have, in Chumash, certain places are called al Shem Ha'atid. So everyone viewed what would become YU. It's an American story. It's like when I came to Israel, there was still the attitude, an American kid, if I learn a little, oh wow, an American kid. I remember when I had dealings with the Moetzah Datit in Yerushalayim, so it was a guy, Noach Zvulon. He was a legendary figure here, a Litvish student who became an Eitzelnik, and he worked for the Moetzah Datit, and this must be 69, 70, and I had to get authorization, Lesadeh Kedushin. And he said, I'm waiting for the chief rabbi, or the head of the Moetzah Datit. I don't believe there was a chief rabbi at that time. Rabbi Tzvi Tzvi Frank had died. I don't believe there was any new appointment yet. I'm positive that there was no chief rabbi. But I'm waiting for the head of Moetzah Datit, and he says to me, Ma asite v'atzal tabirit, ani limadeti gemara b'yeshiv universita. Ma, ta'it aram, eizem esetet. And he started talking to me Masechet Kedushin, which I had just taught in the yeshiva. And I remember he was impressed. Impressed with what? That I knew a little Gemara about Eved Ivri, Eved Kanani, Shivka Kananit, how they go in, how they go out. I mean, that's what you're impressed with today. If you want to talk with me in learning, I'll talk with you. Had the Mamzeira, had the Ragun, I'll talk on a different... But he was impressed. An American knows something, you follow? And I was told there was that attitude also in Bris. Some of the old Lakewood Giants visited Israel and they met with the Briska family and they said, well, they think we're Amayaras. The level they spoke with us on, you might think we're 10 degrees beneath them. All right, that has changed, Baruch Hashem. Unfortunately, it's changed because the world simply went through a readjustment after Hitler. So people came and poked fun at the yeshiva and Americana Bocha, Baskana Lerinin. So Rabbi Revel came up with the idea, and here we owe my cousin a great deal of gratitude. Rabbi Revel came up with the idea to bring a world-class Rosh Yeshiva to the United States. So you all know he brought September 1st, 1922, the boat docked. Rabbi Shlomo Palachek got off the boat and made it to Ilui, and he was the first one to come to America, not to give drushet, not to raise funds, not to be a Rav, but to be a Rosh Yeshiva. And he had tremendous hatzlacha. But unfortunately, the Ribbono Shel Olam called them in, and God called it was my daughter when she was a little girl. My middle daughter said, the Ribbono Shel Olam only takes the best. So he died young of osteomyelitis of the gum, which today we can, with one shot of penicillin, you can cure it, antibiotics. And they didn't have antibiotics yet. It's right before. It's like 1928. So then, of course, Rabbi Revel, lo shaket, that doesn't rest, and he goes after Reb Shimon Shkapa was in America. Reb Shimon would have stayed at yeshiva. Don't believe anything anyone tells you that he was unhappy at the yeshiva. It was the happiest person alive. It's just a shame that the obscured world can't deal with truth. Truth, there's nothing to be afraid of in truth. You can have different opinions, but be truthful. But no, they live with an attitude. If you say Rakefet is a nice guy and a frum guy, it's going to ruin their children. They're going to have a bad role model. Rakefet wears a kippah through God, etc. You understand? It's a terrible attitude. Palavai, if I had grandchildren, would go to Panovich and go to Lubavitch, I'd be happy, just as happy as I am with them Hezdenikim. Okay, so Reb Shimon had to go back to Chafetz Chaim. Reb Chaim Moshe said, yeshiva is falling apart. So then, of course, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik finally gets to America. And this is how the Soloveitchik family gets to America. And this is Rabbi Rebel's achievement. But he did more than that. Whenever a big Talmud Chacham from Lithuania, Poland, White Russia, Ukraine visited America, he would invite him to give a shir in the yeshiva. Now, 1935, Rabbi Aaron Cutler visits America to raise funds for Kletz. They're building a new building. The yeshiva is expanding. And he is the first one to turn down the initial request to give shir in the yeshiva. And I heard the story from the people involved. Torah and a college under one roof. The Vahashem Bazar, how we ended off last week's shir, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. This, the Vahashem Bazar, characterized Reb Aaron. If anyone asked me, what Maimon Chazal would you quote to illustrate Reb Aaron? It's the Vahashem Bazar. And he refused. So Rabbi Rebel was very smart. You have to remember, one of the most prominent members of the yeshiva faculty was Reb Moshe Aaron Palayev. Reb Moshe Aaron Palayev, to have known him was just to have known a saintly individual. He didn't speak above a whisper. Came to America, he had a wife who wanted an American standard of living. I'm revealing secrets now. And he, he worked, he went into business. And like any other, could you picture me in business? I go bankrupt 1 week later. So that's why I never sell my books. Publishers made a deal with me because they know I give them away free. I can't sell, I can't take money. It's not in my ballpark. So he had to find a job. So they took him. He was a Kletzka. He was a Slutska. He was a Talmidjet of the original Kletzk Lakewood Yeshiva when it was in Slutsk. So he knew Reb Aaron, he knew the world. Everyone knew Reb Moshe Aaron Peleyev. So Rabbi Revel sent him to meet with Reb Aaron Katla. And then they threw a curveball. While they were meeting, they worked out that the biggest Rebbe in America, Reb Yosef Eliyo Henkin, should drop in. And Rav Henkin also was a Slutsky. You follow me? So they said to Reb Aaron, that they quoted Rav Henkin. I quoted in Revel, page 155. Rabbi Henkin says, "This is a yeshiva, the Ali yeshivas, and a medical gateman in college." If you know Yiddish, I'm sorry. If anyone does know Yiddish, cut me off. And last week I had a lot of trouble. I'm speaking and I break into. I relive it in Yiddish. And I'm dealing there with South Africans, Australians, the money in Ranan are unbelievable, multi-billionaires there. But Yiddish versteins English. Every time I broke into Yiddish, I had to translate. So he comes in, Rabbi Henkin says, it's a yeshiva like all the yeshivas. In America, everyone goes to college. But here in YU, it's better. They don't have to waste time traveling. You took the positive approach. So Reb Aaron actually came to the yeshivas of Tochanan and gave shir. Later, for the sake of intellectual honesty, three years later, Reb Ochanan Wasserman came to New York. And he was literally the first one to refuse to give a shir, and they couldn't budge him. And when pressure was put on him by wealthy donors such as Tzvi Hirsch Manashevitz, the Manashevitz family, who were frum people, and what's wrong with yeshiva? So he sent them a famous letter quoting from the catalog. They teach Bialik, they teach Acharaam, they teach modern Hebrew literature, and this is a yeshiva. And of course, that's when Reb Moshe Soloveitchik had the big fight with Professor Seitlin. So you see, ultimately, this element, it's like an overture to what will happen after World War II. Okay. So here I am, a little kid, in Manhattan Talmudical Academy, MTA, and I'm exposed to all these literature people, the Shanghai crowd, Mir Yeshiva, Rodden Yeshiva, Risk, which was not a yeshiva, but Gizitz by Reb Chaim by Reb Velvel already in the Cloys and in Gilarit Medem. And although I was in Bnei Akiva and I had other interests in life, but Libi Chaska B'Torah. And like Lakewood was, I'll describe it as a shining sun. That you want to really learn, you really want to experience Europe, you have to go to Lakewood. So here I am, I finished my junior year of high school, I have a long intercession, and I want to go to Lakewood. In order to go to Lakewood, you have to go to Reb Aaron, you have to take a bechinah. And I describe in Washington, beginning on page 78, I'll paraphrase it, take the train from the Bronx to Borough Park, not a simple matter. I think you have to change twice. It's three different trains you go on. And I arrive at Reb Aaron's address, and here I am, a kid. How old was I? 16? All right, I had a good mind when you're young. Chazal say, b'mei chupi. Are you aware of that expression? It means b'mei chupi, when your mind chagifut, your mind is very sharp. There's no question I have more knowledge today, 1 million times over than what I knew when I was 16. But my mind is not as sharp. You understand there's a difference. It's been made for pee. So I figured I'm going to Reb Aaron's house. I'm going to see angels. Reb Aaron Kotler was Kletzka Rosh Yeshiva. Third story walk up. You can believe what Otzkel writes, if you ever read, if they ever mention it. I walked up three stories. The Baron Cutler, third story walk up. Come in, one big room, it's the living room, the dining room, his study, on the side are a few bedrooms. It's like the way we live in Israel. And on the living room wall are dartboards, and their grandchildren throwing darts at the board. Instead of angels, I met normal, down-to-earth little kids, to use a nice Yiddish word, commandoving, carrying on. And I'll never forget that. Now, these kids today may be Gedolei Yisrael, and who knows what their hashkafras. Some of them became very right-wing, way beyond Reb Aaron. That Reb Malkiel stands shoulder to shoulder with Satmar is an absolute disgrace for us who learned in Lakewood and knew Reb Aaron, knew what Reb Aaron suffered and what Israel suffered and what Agudat Yisrael suffered and how many Mechalul Shabbos there are because the Satmar Asid voting. In Israel, the more votes you have, the more money you get from the government, plain and simple. The more money you get, the better the chinuch can be. And remember, Satmar until today, Reb Shmuel Lobach, it kills us. It kills us politically. Could you imagine we don't vote and let the left and the anti-religious take over? God have mercy. This is warped thinking. But these are little kids at the time shooting arrows at the dartboard. So I sit down with Reb Aaron, and by now already I'm at home in Yiddish. It's not like seventh, eighth grade where Zeynab Nishkeret Avot in English, Yitchop Nishkeret Avot in Yiddish. Now I'm at home. And Vasat Mingelerend. And he gives me, I was learning again, Kedushin comes up. We had Sherman Kedushin, first remember Gittin, then Kedushin in the yeshiva. And Reb Aaron asks me a question, and I give an answer. And his eyes light up. And I don't know, I think I'm a sane, rational person, but I saw the pupils of his eyes were like Sifrei Torah dancing. And Reb Aaron pats me on the shoulder. The answer I gave was the answer of the Mashar. So could you imagine, here you have a survivor who went through the hell of Europe, his yeshiva students, family, so many wiped out. And he is an American kid who percentage-wise should wind up being a third-generation American from the Bronx, wind up being a totally assimilated Jew, and this little kid, Chabdois Amasha. I'll never forget those eyes, the pupils, the Sifrei Torah dancing. So of course, I got into Lakewood. And Lakewood was an experience, not that long in Lakewood. A few months now, came back during the year, came back a year later, but a very deep, lasting experience. A good deal of my scholarship is a result of the Lakewood encounter. And here I'll tell you a story that I've repeated 1,000 times over. It's the summertime. Have you been in Lakewood during the summer? Lakewood is hot as can be. No air conditioning yet. But we have a real problem. In order to daven in Lakewood, it's not the way I daven here. I haven't worn a jacket in 49 years now. I'm uncomfortable wearing a jacket. What can I tell you? But in Lakewood, you need a jacket to daven. Not to learn. To learn, you didn't wear a jacket. Still that way today in the Litvishi Yeshivat. But now, how do you get the jacket back and forth? Lakewood is very small. The dorm was on one block, the dining room was on another block, third converted house was the base medrash. You got to wear the jacket. You got to wear the jacket. It's 100 degrees out. It's 41 degrees centigrade, 42 centigrade. You're wearing a jacket. It comes a chalash and you can faint. So American kids are very intelligent. And we figured out if you fling the jacket over your shoulder, don't put your hand in the sleeves, it's not as oppressive. Right or wrong? All right, but now, whoever heard of an Erev, 1953? Whoever heard of an Erev? I want you to know it's probably the only issue that the Litvisher and the Lubavitcher Rebbe were in agreement with. All the Litvisher, Pavel, the Mishkanot, Yaakov, how can you build an Erev in a big city? Lubavitcher Rebbe, I don't know if because of the Mishkanot, Yaakov, but for his own reasons, was very opposed to an Erev. All right, nowadays there isn't a place in the world where there isn't an Erev because from Jews they're not going to live in a place where there's no Erev. It's a different ballpark. But, no, you fling the jacket, you're not wearing it properly. Chas v'chalila, this could be carrying on Shabbos. I need not tell you how much has been written in a rain hat. You put a plastic on the rain hat. Reb Moshe, Reb Menashe Klein. Right, glasses, are you allowed to wear glasses on Shabbos? Look into the Aruch HaShulchan, you'll be shocked. Could you imagine? You're not going to wear glasses? Carrying questions one after another. You're limping, you have problems with your feet, you have meniscus, you need a cane, so much has been written. So we raised the Shaila. Ah, now a whole group of Lakewood kids will ask Rabaran. And you have to understand, the older you are, the more you fear greatness. The younger you are, all right. I'm not overwhelmed. He's a human being like I'm a human being. Would you believe it? Yours truly. No one wanted to ask the Rosh Yeshiva. I said, I'll ask the Rosh Yeshiva. So the Rosh Yeshiva came back from Borough Park after Shabbos. And Vic, did you ever see the old Lakewood where the Rosh Yeshiva sat, where there was the blue shas, the shuls and the shas with the blue binding? That was the finest binding that Mr. Klein of Bartons gave the Rosh Yeshiva, a personal gift that only he is to use. That was in his office. No student touched that shas. Blue binding. Ugh. And Rosh Yeshiva is sitting and learning. And I knock on the door, I come in, I said, Rebbe Chavashalat Zafregen, I have a question to ask. And I asked him the Shaila. And his answer was the heart of Yiddishkeit. Didn't open up a Mishnah Berurah, didn't open up a Magen Avraham, didn't open up a Taz, didn't open up an Aruch HaShulchan. I quote, Avada dafta sein Mutter, mir ma sei gegangen Slabotko und der Auto und der Schiebe der Lois Mordechai haben uns nicht angemerkt. Translation. Certainly it has to be permissible. During the summer in Slabotka, we did the same thing with the jackets. And neither the Alta, meaning the Mashkiach, or Natan Svi Finkel, or the Rosh Yeshiva of Moshe Mordechai Epstein, the Lavush Mordechai, neither of them reprimanded us, remarked anything. If they let us go that way, it is certainly permissible. That is considered wearing the jacket as well. Do you understand what the Rosh Yeshiva did at that moment? Our tragedy of Judaism today is everyone thinks they can create their own Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit is Mesorah, continuity. He took a little kid, he took Ani Rothkopf, a Joe DiMaggio fan. Well, what's your first name?
Ralph.
Ralph. Do you know who Joe DiMaggio was? If you want a copy of my husband, I have it in the office. I can give you a few.
On the internet.
Yeah, but, all right. This one is, they redid it in America. It's a Hushup with DiMaggio in the stadium and Rick Kevin and NYU. And I show it to my grandchildren, even my great-grand, I have a great-grandchild who's a sports kid. He left, what's this for a mazer?
Is this a tape or a CD?
It's a CD. Gentlemen, you see what Reb Aaron did? He took a kid from the Bronx and he put me back in the early 1900s in Slapatka. And I met the Alta, and I met the Levash Matchai. And that's what Torah is all about. This is Reb Aaron, from the Rav, exactly the same message. If you heard the talk last Saturday night at the banquet of the Talmud I brought back to Yiddishkeit, exactly the same message. He spoke beautifully, Harry M. Dura. He said, what I see in my Rebbe is it's not just him. When he gives his share, there's a long chain behind him. And he's a very bright guy, Harry. And he illustrated that chain from Rakefet back to Moshe Kibel Torah Mesinai. It's very moving to the audience. I later continued on that theme that our shlichut to Russia from the Mossad was introducing the Sirivnikim, the Russian Jews, to the Torah Shebaal Peh, the living tradition, which they had not seen. It had been cut off. We re-sparked it. And if I wrote and I published, it appears in Akafet Aron, on the Shmadchai, on the Alta, it's a result of that moment with Reb Aaron, and I cannot forget it. When I came out, they were waiting for me, four or five guys, all older than me. Was hat der Rosh Yeshiva gesagt? I said, Mater, Hitir, Ein Lanu Bayah. Another incident happened. Now, did I tell you this story? I know I've told it in the last few weeks, but I don't know where. If I told it in class, cut me off immediately. The story with the cook in the kitchen. Mrs. Berman, I had the name right. My memory is right. I can't get over it. Yitzchak Dershowitz in his book also. So let me tell you what happened. In the kitchen, you know, was a lady, worked in the kitchen, a yeket. We used to call it kitchen smicha. The yekes have tremendous derech eretz for Talmidei Chachamim, at least in that period. And every young man in the yeshiva, she would call rabbi. Your father used to call it kitchen smicha. Everyone was a rabbi. 100 students, 100 rabbis. So Friday night, after the meal, the bachrim in charge, the Gabayim, would tell her, Mrs. Berman, tomorrow morning have lunch ready, 10:30. Vayehi hayom, and it was a quid, Lakewood was a good davening, but no frills, no singing, it wasn't Hasidish at all, we understand, if you were looking for singing and spirit, this was nothing Lakewood. Lakewood was davening and back to learning. So we finished 15 minutes early, and 100 bachrim reached the dining room, 10:15. The food is all ready, it's Shabbos morning, you can't cook. And Mrs. Berman, the yeket streak in her comes out. You told me 10:30, I will not serve until 10:30. Time is time. I've seen this, you should know. I have yekas in my family, and one time grandparents did something that I could never fathom. They were supposed to pick up a grandson at 3:30, and they were there 3:30, and they took off. He came 3 minutes later. He hasn't forgotten it until today. But, you know, I'm also a shtickle yekka. I begin on time, I end in time, etc., etc. But a person has to be flexible. Humans are humans. Never allowed Rabbi Koopman to boo me in Michalada locking the door. He would begin 8:30, lock the door. I have married women I'm teaching. Maybe they had a problem with their children, their husband, going here, what, when, where, transportation. I always say to a student, if you're late and come in even for 5 minutes of my class, it's a compliment to me. You're telling me even to hear the Rebbe 5 minutes is worthwhile. All right, she refused to serve. Oh boy, Monday morning, Reb Aaron came back. The top students went in and told the Rosh Yeshiva, we have a complaint, Mehobin Ataina, And they said 100 students sat Beitel Torah for 15 minutes. 100, I know exactly what they told them. 100 times 15 minutes of Beitel Torah because of this stubborn yekid. And I'll never forget Reb Aaron's answer. Oh, it spread through the yeshiva. We became different people. He said, "Is that correct? You're absolutely right. Aber ich can't say one word to her. We're right. Man of Shach. Und Vedar, if we're right, why can't the Rashi? She's an almana. And different rules apply to an almana. So I want to tell you, that story has influenced my life until today. We get invitations. I'm busy, I have family. I will never turn down an invitation from an almana. I tell Malkus, she's an almana. We have to go. She's inviting us. It's a powerful lesson. That was Reb Aaron. And let me share with you another story that I still relive. I can't ever forget it. Abriyut. It's with me. As I mentioned, in 1953, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer died. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Eitz Chaim in Yerushalayim. He had gone on Aliyah in the mid-20s. That's when Reb Aaron, his son-in-law, took over the Kletzky Yeshiva.
What year did he die?
53. And they elected Reb Aaron the titular head. I say titular head because he could only go, he went a few summers and gave shroom during the summer. So now it's Reb Aaron's first trip to Israel. Travel was very different than today. There was no jet, it was propellers. You had to fly to Europe. From Europe you had to change planes, fly on to Israel. It's a different ballpark. So Reb Aaron is going, and that Motzai Shabbos, that Friday, he was saying to Hillim, the whole yeshiva was ibigarashed. I don't know how to translate that, but we were ibigarashed. I don't know how to explain it. We were excited. We were, Reb Aaron's going this big journey, saying to Hillim, and finally the car comes for Reb Aaron, the Rebbetzin, and the whole yeshiva, without exception, with candles, everyone holding a candle, we walked behind the car for about 10 blocks. And we were singing from Yeshayahu Nun Hei, Ki v'simcha teitzeu, u'v'shalom tuvalun, ha'harim v'ha'gvahat, yitzchu lifnechem rida, v'chol asei sadeh, yimchahu chaf. I'll never forget that experience. You felt the kesha, Talmud Rebbe, Mesora, the handing over of klepts in American context. I could readily understand now what I referred to last week, that the heart of the yeshiva, the nucleus, the Alta Kletzka, Reb Aaron was more than a Rebbe. He was their father. They related to him like children relating to a father. Even better, relating to a mother. And that night, the car leaving. Today, you fly, you get on the plane, you go to sleep, you wake up, you're in JFK. It's a different ballpark. All right, I have a little bit of a longer trip, but I'm giving shiur tomorrow, and then there won't be shiur for 2 weeks. I'm flying to Miami on Tuesday, and I'll be giving shiur in Deerfield Beach, Hollywood, North Miami Beach, Bal Harbor, Miami Beach. I'll be seeing Vic's niece, etc., etc. Baruch Hashem. But Today, Florida, it's a smaller, it's a not as powerful a plane as they used to New York. It's a smaller plane, so the trip is longer. All right, you go to sleep, you wake up, there's breakfast, you get off, you're home. Here it was quite a trip, but what love, what feeling, what dedication. And then I want to talk about someone else in Lakewood who played a very dominant role with Reb Aaron. You've all heard the name, Reb Nosson Vachtvogel. Reb Nosson Vachtvogel, very interesting life story. Born in Montreal, his father was a Rav in Montreal, and came to the only place in town, Reb Yeshiva Sobtzchochanan. And you got to remember the 1920s, the Major Te'iloi. Everyone learned. There was no other place to learn. Reb Nosson Vachtvogel was there. The Miller was there, the Scheinberg brothers, everyone at a certain point was influenced by what was going on in YU. Then their mornings, Reb Mordechai Gifter, you can go on and on. And Reb Nosson later goes to Europe and he's entirely captivated by the Litvish Welt in Europe. He is one of those who showed up when Reb Aaron and I spoke about last week, called the meeting on the Lower East Side, Avi, and said, Mila Shem Elai, we have to reestablish pure Europeisha Teira on American soil. He was one of those that went along, and almost originally, when Lakewood began, Reb Aaron appointed him the Mashkiach of the Yeshiva. And Reb Aaron told Reb Nosson, I reveal secrets now, told Reb Nosson, he likes that kid, Rothkopf, from the Bronx. See that he remains in Lakewood. So Reb Nosson befriended me. And he used to give me oranges. That was like a big treat. Like when I went to Russia in the 80s, in my first trip, January 81, I learned what oranges meant in Russia. I see Rabbi Rubin is shaking his head. Remember, I saw people waiting online and I asked Elias, what are they waiting for? He says, they're waiting to get a kilo of oranges just arrived from Morocco. I thought he was kidding me. We go to the other end, they're walking out, Yvan Stupan carrying a little bag of oranges. And no one works. These are all people who should be working, government jobs. You're going to be paid no matter what. It's a communist state. They have time to wait in line for oranges. So I got to know the Mashkiach, and he entertained me with stories about what YU was like in the late 20s. And the best story he told me is when the Radna Ilui showed up. Who was the Radna Ilui? Reb Shmuel Belkin. And he says, I learned the Chavrita with him. But I couldn't afford to pay him. I was a poor kid from Montreal. But we made a deal. He taught me Gemara, and I taught him English. So that if anyone will ever do a proper doctor or a Shmuel Belkin, let it be stated, and you can quote me, quote my sources, that Reb Shmuel's first English teacher in the United States was Reb Nosson Vachtvogel. And I'll never forget, he taught me Gemara, I taught him English. Reb Nosson was a wonderful individual. The Ehrlichkeit, the Frumkeit. I'll tell you another story about Reb Nosson. One time I needed change. I don't know why I needed change, but maybe I'll come to it in a minute. Could be I'll know why in a minute why I needed change. I needed change. So I asked someone in the yeshiva, they have change of a kveis, a half dollar, a quarter, I don't know. And Reb Nosson saw me asking him, and he said, well, what's the problem? I said, oh, I need change, maybe I wanted to buy a so I don't know. He took me by the hand, and he went to about six different people till he found someone who could give me change. So I asked him, Rebbe, was that from the Vatelsheim site? It's not the end of the world. And he said to me, To get change for someone is a gemilat chesed. Do you understand what we're talking about? These are people, it's a different level. A different level of existence. They think differently. They act differently. These are, to use a musavot that we'll use with Rav Lesson that I have no translation for. Design oiska abit to mention. Underline the word oiska abit. Work that. How many are like that? We're wild Indians. You remember my thought? With the 5,000 shluchim of Chabad, that's more than all the Musaniks who understood that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is about from 1840 until today, 2019 already. 1 year ahead of us, don't forget. But that's Musach, to be what a level, what people. Rabbaran, let me say one more word about Reb Aaron before I go into the negative. We'll come to it in a minute, I wind up in YU. Many years later.
Right. How many years were your life with them?
Besach HaKol, I went back and forth for a year and a half. But Besach HaKol. But a very deep experience.
You graduated from MTA.
Yeah, I had to go back to graduate. I'll come to this in a minute. But I want to end off with Reb Aaron. Years later, the last year of Reb Aaron's life, so I told you, maybe I didn't say it here, I don't know. I write about it. I already was in the rabbinate. Remember I told you I got killed in my first rabbinate, re-elected 9-7. Interesting article, Charlie Liebman, he owes me, so I was now my second shtetl. Second shtetl already, I built it from the ground, the first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County, Maplewood, South Orange. The shul was literally one block from South Orange, right on the border, if you know, suburban Essex County, outside of Newark. All reform, conservative. Ah, what temple. I don't know if there's one Jew left walking the face of the earth from those temples. There probably are hundreds of Balei Tshuva. But those that didn't, Shalosh, that didn't discover what Torah is about, God have mercy where they are, fifth, sixth generation. So, Simchas Torah, all the Balabatim are invited from the hotels to come to the yeshiva in Lakewood. That's the fundraiser. And my vice president, Mr. Abradine, goes over to Reb Aaron and tells Reb Aaron, the Rebbe, I'm going to buy a shul, I'm going to buy a shul, I'm like we built a new shul in our neighborhood. And we have a rabbi who once learned in Lakewood. Reb Aaron looks up, and Vihester, what's his name? And Abradine says, Harav Rotkov. And Reb Aaron, he remembered. And he asked one question. The shul had a mechitza? Does it have a mechitza? This was America 62. And Abradim says, yeah, this is the einzig shul in the ganze gegend, but had a mechitza. It's the only shul in the entire neighborhood that has a mechitza. Once again, the pupils in Reb Aaron's eyes went into a Torah dance. That was Reb Aaron Cutler. Now, The negative. Lakewood, in order to establish itself, it could be that you had to be very extreme. You had to tell an American kid you're giving up a great deal, you're giving up college, your profession, the American dream, Western civilization. But what you're doing is right, it's the only right way, nothing else is important. Herbie, this is the way to go. And that was the atmosphere that started to develop in Lakewood, started to develop after World War II. It already was indicated by Reb Aaron in 1935 when he initially refused to give a shir in Yeshivas Ritz Kol Chanan. And an incident happened that shook me up. A very simple incident. Friday, there was no Seder in the afternoon. Everyone was free to do what they want. Some people went for walks, some people slept, whatever you wanted. Friday morning was Seder, 1 o'clock. I forget already if we daven Mincha or we daven Mincha later, but you were free. So that morning, I bought a New York Times. You have to understand what a New York Times meant. When the Rav spoke about being an American, it meant reading the New York Times. The Rav would quote from the New York Times. You have Moshe Feinstein, you have Eidit Nemana, from his son-in-law, Reb Moshe David Tendler. Every day he read the New York Times. Oh, what the New York Times. It's Malin B'Kodesh V'yein Moridin. So I bought a New York Times. I don't know if it was 2 cents, 3 cents. It was money. I was a poor kid. Money was money. I left it on my bed. I come back after lunch to lie on the bed and read the New York Times and find out what's going up in the world, on in the world. There's my New York Times ripped into 10 different pieces in the garbage can. Some kanoi ripped it up. How can you waste time reading the New York Times? I don't know what the New York Times doesn't have pornography. It's not the Daily Znut or the New York Post. It doesn't have Akbar Arayta, I don't know, Bitul Torah, Lashon Hara, who needs to know this, whatever their reason was, reading a paper, you know what went on the lesson, where they caught students reading papers. Oh my. You know where Gamaliel Yaakov Weinberg, they saw, they started to be frightened, he wants to learn Russian language, to become a Matskill. That ripping up of my newspaper, the Kanoi who did that, probably played a great role in pushing me into Yeshiva University. The other part of the story is very simple. Let me go back to the beginning of today's shiur, the yahrzeit of my mother. As I've told you more than once, where I come from, fathers played no role whatsoever. This is not just me. Every kid I went to school with, your father went out, he made a living. He came home, your mother prepared food for him. It's a different world. My grandchildren know how to cook, know how to bake. I can't get over what they're capable of doing. It's a different world. Every woman in my family, all my granddaughters-in-law, all have a profession. Not just a profession. Medical doctors, PhDs, B'nai Shalom. I come from a different world. The dominant figure in raising you was your mother. 100%. My mother was very upset. I wanted to remain in Lakewood. Libi Hashka Betorah. I wanted to remain in Lakewood. I loved Rav Aaron. I loved Rav Nassim. And she was very upset. My mother went to college. She dropped out with the Depression. My father dropped out of pharmaceutical school. But that was a Depression tragedy. I went to college. And you're not going to go to college. An American kid. Yeshiva University. Give it a try. Well, the ripped up newspaper and my mother, I made a deal with them. I'll try Yeshiva College for 1 year. And if I don't like it, I can go back to Lakewood. I need not tell you, I tried Yeshiva College for 1 year and I still haven't left Yeshiva University. For better or for worse. Let's make a cheshbon how many years it is since I went back to college, 55, and today we're in the year 2018. Unbelievable. I want to go a drop further and bring another person into the classroom who, unfortunately, you won't know the name, and this is a man who did so much for Torah. Recognize the name Rabbi Dr. Joseph Kamenetsky. Joe Kamenetsky. Who recognizes the name? Who remembers Joe Kamenetsky? Joe Kamenetsky was a member of the first graduating class of Yeshiva College, 1932. Joe Kamenetsky was a machanech par excellence. He ran the Talmud Torah in those days. Talmud Torahs were very important, very big. They don't exist today, because when you're from, you send your kid to a day school. In those days, people were from, semi-from, many sent their kids to Talmud Torah. He ran the Talmud Torah in Rabbi Dr. Leo Young's synagogue, the Jewish center, the Upper West Side, the heart of high class, upper class, elite Yiddishkeit in New York City, in the whole United States, basically. Joe Kamenetsky was one of a kind. He also was the chavruta of my cousin, Noah Daniels, Echonim Tzadikim Lebracha. Joe Kamenetsky, I also taught grandchildren of his. Now, when Torah Mesorah was established, he was the director. He was Mr. Chinuch in the New York area. He worked hand in hand with Mr. Mendelovich of Torah Vadas. When Rav Aaron came to America and got involved in Chinuch beyond Var HaTzalah, Joe Kamenetsky became one of his favorite people. Joe Kamenetsky wrote a memoir, it's called Memorial Encounters, but you have to be aware, he censored himself. This was published by a shoot-off of Art Scroll, as I recall, and Joe himself told me, you understand, I had to censor myself. Nevertheless, very fascinating, the snippets you get from him, of Rav Aaron Cutler. And I'm quoting from page 108, Memorial Encounters. Here, Rav Aaron was very involved. This is after Var HaTzalah, Lakewood, Chinuch Atzmai, Agudat Yisrael, Torah U'Mesorah. Now, Rav Aaron, you never saw him without a sefer. And he describes him here. He walked into meetings of the Rabbinical Administration Board of Torah U'Mesorah, always with a sefer in his hand. A hush fell upon the room. It was time to get down to serious business. I want to add, the sefer that Rav Aaron always carried with him, and you can see pictures of this, was a Mishnah Berurah. The gadlut of the Mishnah Berurah, that's something you can learn even in a noisy environment. The Talmud Chacham, the Mishnah Berurah flows. It's not like carrying with you a Shevet Shuvat Reb Kveger, or a Shevet Shuvat, for the sake of argument, the Shaket Aryeh. There you need quiet. You have to be able to concentrate. Rav Aaron would go to weddings. I saw this with my own eyes. And he would sit Abelon up front, and being Gavra LeGavra, between course to course, between person to person bothering him, he would be carrying a Mishnah Berurah. And that's, you can see pictures. He never wasted a moment. But what's fascinating here is that already in Rav Aaron's time, the world was moving right. You see, once you create an atmosphere that the more right wing you are, the frumer you are, ain't the dubber self. And here's one story that I tell in the Silver Era, and then I'll quote Rabbi Yosef Kamenetsky. But I was an eyewitness to this story, that Rav Aaron is davening in Lakewood and finishes Kedusha, and before the bracha Kel HaKodosh is finished, he turns around. And you know, it's a machlokes ha'paiskim. Do you have to stand? Meikadin, there's no reason to stand still. You have a right to turn around. It's chazaras hashatz already. It's the third bracha. And I saw with my own eyes an American yingle, a dummy, frumkeit, goes over to Rav Aaron, and he says to the Rosh Yeshiva in his broken Yiddish, how can you turn around? He shows him the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You're not allowed to budge till after the third bracha is over. You see, we were amazed. Wow. I am told this, I didn't see with my own eyes, but I'm told that some Lakewood boys visited Rav Aaron in his home in Borough Park, and the Rebbetzin put out cookies and tea, coffee, and they asked the Rebbetzin from what bakery the cookies came. You understand? So here, I got so uphit in what you see in life, okay? This is a certain mentality. I always tell my talmidim, I've told them, you know, when they needed guidance, the collegiate kids, I would always tell them, even if you mock me on something, but if when you're with your Rebbe, do what the Rebbe does. You don't make yourself frummer than the Rebbe in his presence. So here on page 111, he gets involved with a very interesting problem, a problem that haunted us, still haunts us in Israel, although more or less the problem has resolved itself. And this is the problem of the way Yitzchak Rubin went to school. Yitzchak Rubin went to school, elementary school, 8 years, high school, 4 years, and all his classes were mixed.
Co-ed.
100%.
You have to mention being started.
Yitzchak, Savlanitis, relax. And we're talking Maimonides in Boston. And I'll never forget, these my own eyes, my own ears, you understand? I'm in the Rav Shir already, and a delegation comes from Far Rockaway. Highlight is going to highlight what today is. It said that, what's it, Hank today? Hafta, it's like Maftir, Hafta. Hebrew Academy, 5 towns.
And Rockaway.
Okay. Baruch Hashem. Hafta. Highlights. Okay. But say that. So highlight this big news. They're beginning a yeshiva high school in the Far Rockaway area. This is big news. And big machloket, separate or not separate. And they finally send a delegation to the Rav, headed by Harold Lyman, Rabbi Dr. Harold Lyman, the father of Shneur Zalman Lyman, Talmud of Mr. Mendelovich, great Machanech, and his old, became an Aliyah, lived around the corner from me, my neighbor, lived on Rehov Herzog. And they come to the Rav, and the Rav had, as Yitzchak said, co-ed classes. And the Rav told them, look, you can't use me as an example. I had no choice. When I established Maimonides back in the mid-30s, I had a total of 5 students. If I wouldn't have co-ed classes, I'd have 3 students. You can't begin a school, 3 students, 2 students, 5 students. And it began that way. I think Maimonides remains co-ed until today. In the state of Israel, you have Chinuch Mamlachti Dati and Chinuch Mamlachti Torani, I think it's called. And more and more parents want the separate classes because research has shown that students learn more, learn better. I have my own problems with co-ed classes. When you start learning on a level, how can you teach to a co-ed class Matach, Petach, Patuach? I don't want to explain it. The Gemara in Ketubah, etc., etc. It has to be the last parak in Kedushin to Yavama of certain sugyas. You have to have a little feeling for tzniut. Okay.
So you don't teach those Gemaras. That's
problematic. Yeah, but you have to teach Kol HaTorah Kulo. You have to instill upon a kid. When I already was a kid in high school, I wanted to know Kol HaTorah Kulo.
How comes in Boston? We learned Kohen. We learned...
because the Rav became a Hasid. That's the Hasidish approach. The kids have to learn what they have to know. And the Rav's approach was, these are American kids. But when it came to YU, it was the Lushan. It was a different ballpark. But okay, look, the issue hangs fire. I'm not here in the documentary. So Rabbi J.J. Schechter, they take the approach that with the Rav, it was not just the B'di'evet, it was more Lachatchila. So I asked Atari, she said, there is truth to it that my father felt that the girls would never get a good education if they were separated. They wouldn't teach them on the same level. And by keeping the classes co-ed, it reached a certain level. But she did agree. I mean, this is a sad story. So I said to her, how come your father was opposed to bringing Stern College uptown? And there, no one can tell me secrets, because I was a Rosh Yeshiva, and I sat in the room where the meeting was held, room 101, and all the Rosh Yeshiva, the Rav signed first, and the only one who didn't sign was Rabbi Yosef Weiss. He didn't want to hurt Rabbi Belkin. Maybe Rabbi Palev didn't sign. I don't recall, but Rabbi Yosef Weiss, I know when I asked Rabbi, how come? He didn't want to cause Rabbi Belkin problems. But everyone signed that we're going to resign if they bring Stern College uptown near the yeshiva. So I said, so she said to me, well, my father was opposed because, boys and girls, 18 years and older, you got to be careful, may not be troublesome, how riot. So I said, today, what about high school? She said, you're right, today in high schools, my father probably would be opposed. Because today, lo aleinu, I don't want to elaborate, but if you give out condoms in high school, Shem Yirachem, okay. So this problem came up in the Torah Mesorah, and they wanted to usher that Torah Mesorah had nothing to do with schools that are co-ed, and Rabbi Aaron was opposed, and the Kanat already was beyond him. Rabbi Aaron was opposed. Another example came up, very fascinating, that the New York Jewish Board of Education, Jewish Education Committee of New York, which is today the Jewish...
It's opposed what?
Oh, he wanted that we cannot say no to schools that have boys and girls together. We haven't yet reached the level in America where we can insist separate or nothing. And if you have co-ed and you're going to push them away, God forbid, they're not going to be shomer Torah mitzvah. And Rabbi Aaron is very strongly opposed to the Kanoim who felt that Torah Mesorah should have nothing to do with such schools. Today, in the year 2019, Torah Mesorah has nothing to do with such schools, but it's a different America today than America of the 1950s that we're talking about.
Aaron was defending the people who wanted co-ed schools?
Defending, but not to push them away. That we're not on that level. And the same thing happened in relation to the Jewish Education Committee of New York. And what was the story? Mr. Stephen Klein, who owned Barton's and plays a major role as probably one of the leading Balabatim who supported the Baron Cutler. A few Balabatim, Mr. Stephen Klein, Mr. Sam Feuerstein, Mr. Erwin Bunin, these were the leading Balabatim who supported the Baron Cutler. So Mr. Stephen Klein was a businessman, and he came up with the idea that the Jewish Education Committee of New York, or what today is called the Board of Jewish Education, then it was called the JEC, Jewish Education Committee, if I'm correct. JEC, yeah. So Mr. Klein came up with the idea, why don't we form a separate department as part of the JEC, which will be responsible for the yeshiva in New York. And if they're responsible for the yeshiva, it leaves Torah Mesorah free to deal with day schools all over the country. They don't have to get involved with New York, and it would free tremendous manpower and assets. And Rabbi Aaron loved the idea. And he made a condition that you have to have Joe Kamenetsky as our representative. And Joe Kamenetsky describes the tremendous machloket that Tzirei Agudat Yisrael, young kids who were so distant, so far from Europe and Rabbi Aaron and Klatsk and felt they knew it all, they got up and opposed Rabbi Aaron in public. And Rabbi Aaron, you got to read the description here, rose like a lion and said, you don't have to teach me what Das Torah is about. And you don't have to teach me what Halakha is about. But this is a beautiful idea. And with Joe Kamenetsky involved, I have total confidence in him. And that's exactly what happened. For many, many years, JEC, which was headed by Schiff, Dr. Schiff from Boston originally, very wonderful individual, they took care of the yeshiva, and Torah Mesorah became an international organization. And I will tell you, add one more stanza to this concept, to this chapter. Remember I mentioned to you that Eli Schlesberg just came out with a book, Mein Shtetl of Baltimore. All right? There's a very interesting story in the book, and I heard the story many years ago already from the Schlesbergs. Baltimore, too. Rav Ruderman was a Rosh Yeshiva, but totally with the American scene, the Western scene. And Baltimore, too, starts moving more right, more right. And now they're dedicating a new mikveh, raised a fortune of money, and having a big banquet to celebrate. And people are starting to demand separate seating at the banquet. Other people, I showed you once a tshuva from Reb Moshe, if there's going to be separate seating, we're not coming. And I understand this. Your generation may have a problem, but when I go out with my wife, I want to sit next to my wife. I quote to you Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, when one of the Marcus family got married, Reb Aaron's son-in-law, Reb Rafi Marcus, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So now the Marcus family, they're making a wedding, and Rafi or his older brother Jay goes over to Reb Aaron. Rebbe, we're having a little area, separate seating for the Rebbeim who are coming. Where do you want to sit? With your wife or with the Rebbeim? And Reb Aaron, without batting an eyelash, answers, I love my wife. What kind of question is this? Of course I want to sit with my wife. And I feel exactly the same way. I have to tell you, I don't stay for weddings where there's separate seating. Unless I absolutely have to, but it's not my cup of tea by far. I don't know what a world we're living in that the men, don't get me started. I'm not a sex predator, and the women I know are not sex sirens, period. God shall up it what we have in our world today with all the fun type. So Reb Aaron, coming back to Baltimore, so they're having this bitter machlaikas, and you're dedicating a new mikvah. So they put it up to five prominent rabbanim to decide the matter. The Rosh Yeshiva, the Mashkiach, outstanding Nei Yisrael people, and the vote is 3-2 to have separate seating. And people said to the Mashkiach, you should know that because of this vote, women will not go to mikveh. You're turning away people who are not going to come to the dinner, who are not going to be inspired. The next day, the Mashkiach called Eli Schlesberg, who was in charge, and said he's changing his vote. Chas v'chalila, a woman shouldn't go to mikveh because I voted for separate seating. And the dinner was held. I believe there are two separate areas. I had a wedding of a daughter like that, like a conservative temple. Men on one side, women on the other, and men and women together in the place, the middle or the side. It was a nightmare, but I had to go along with my son-in-law's requests. Dai l'chakim v'remisa. So you see, this question of what to do with schools that are co-ed, of course, la-chat-chila, we wish it wouldn't be. But there's a reality. We're in America. We're in the 1950s. And Reb Aaron was adamant, but the Frumkeit binge was already there. And you're dealing here with Dinei Nefashot, because if you push them away and it's not Torah Mesorah, who knows where they will wind up at that moment in time. Let me go one step further and end off. One second. A very difficult subject to touch upon, but I have to be intellectually honest. Baruch Ato Adonai Melech Olam Shekol Yevitrao. One step further. When I learned in Lakewood, we were talking 54, 55, tremendous anti-Chabad feeling. Now, people tell me that this already began in Europe. It goes back the sixth Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, to Riatz, as they say. There already was a messianic overtone. And the Litvishim were very flabbergasted, were very frightened that it's not just a messianic overtone, but it's as if Lubavitch has the key to messianicism with all the implication. When I learned in Lakewood, Rabbi Aaron already spoke. What had happened was, and I mentioned this years ago in class, I mentioned it 20 years, 30 years ago, in different contexts. That's the rubric. When you hear that, you should know what I'm talking about. That the sixth Rebbe, one Shabbos, spoke about that it's talking about the Yetzer Hara knocking over the Yetzer HaTov. And this, of course, raises a very simple question. If you're allowed to take the Gemara, Nezikin, torts, civil law, and interpret it homiletically. All right? How many of you have read up on this topic? Excuse me? You have Merkas HaRav already put out Hasidic interpretations of the Gemara. And the first one there is world famous, the Reb Shmelka, and he's learning and he's searching and he went to the Magid. And he didn't know whether he should go to the Gaon, the Magid, and he says, well, I know how to learn. He comes into the Magid, Emes Haikaren Tashman Shel Avid, the first Mishnah in Shas, and he touches up. What time do you read? And the Magid gets hysterical. That's the pshat. What kind of ignoramus are you? Me Ema time, Me Ema Umiyira Korim. Alright, is that a good interpretation? Very interesting question. Well, the seventh Rebbe, Reb Menachem Mendel, the Ramash, when he heard this attack, this I found out years later, he said, what are they attacking my father-in-law? I think he quoted Reb Shmuel, already from the second generation, third generation of Chassidic Rebbeim. They already said the pshat. But the story is they came to Lakewood and told Reb Aaron what the Rebbe said in Shabbos, and he reacted. Amrav said that because he got angry, he got mad. And I remember when I learned in Lakewood, they couldn't comprehend. They stopped learning. They go out on the streets. They take a lulav and etrog. They take tefillin. Well, what is this? What is this? You ask Jews to put on tefillin? They don't want to put on tefillin. Go fly a kite. What do we have to plead and beg? What do we... Well, they waste time learning again. V'Hashem Bazaar. That you stand on a street corner pleading with Jews to l'taltel lulav and etrog, l'taltel l'aniach tefillin, etc. All right. This was a very much, I would say... It was part of the background of Lakewood when I was there. What's amazing is that nowadays, so many years later, take a look at Lakewood. They too are involved in outreach. As I've said, it's a little different than Chabad. Their outreach is the community kollel. But when all is said and done, you know how a community kollel functions? They learn one Seder, they learn a second Seder, The third Seder, they're out there teaching Chumash and Rashi and teaching basic Hashkafa and teaching a little Jewish history and involved with movies and all that we do in the modern world to try like a rave people to Yiddishkeit. I ask you, is this learning? The Vahashem Baza? You're taking time off to do this? So you see, Lakewood has come full cycle. Nevertheless, the messianic issue is real, and if I can quote Rakefet to you, it's a beautiful thought, good insight. I quote, I've said it endless times, what open orthodoxy does to disgrace the Rebbe's memory, the messianics disgrace the Rebbe's memory. And I'm proud to say, all my students from Chabad, I know many of them intimately, they are absolutely normal people who walk the earth with their 2 feet on the ground. If you say that no one was better than the Rebbe as far as becoming Mashiach, I'll agree. I gave big shayurim, behold, davadod, the Gemara, and Chizkiyahu HaMelech. I can't repeat everything now. The Rambam, Bakochba, Melech. I have Torah from the Rav. The Rebbe was heads and shoulders. On the other hand, look what Mashiach has to do. He has to fight Muhammad, destroy nations that oppose us, lead us back a total kibbutz goliath, build the Beis HaMikdash. As far as I know, we haven't accomplished all this yet. We're making progress, but it's slow but sure. Kima kima, as the Medrash Rabbah says in Shir HaShirim, the future gula, step by step. But this is not Mashiach. That the Rebbe was head and shoulders above everyone else in the generation, ain't matapalik. No one can argue with that. So it's interesting. So many years later, when I was in America and I visited some of these outreach kolalim of Lakewood, inwardly I had to laugh. I said, wow, they're now like Chabad, all right, a little bit different. But when all is said and done, what is Chabad doing? Exactly the same. The lulav and etrog, the tefillin, that's only the start. But then they want to bring you in their classes, to go on their websites. There's no end to what they're trying to instruct, to learn, to inspire. My dear students, I haven't finished Rabbi. Stay 1 moment and I have something for you. I have one more shlav to do. The students I knew from Lakewood in my time, when I spoke with you about Vic, and what became of some of them. And you'll see here too, some success, some terrible failure, but fascinating. And then we begin the Yaakov Moshe HaKohen lesson. Yitzchak, you better come to class with a nice white shirt, a tie, beautiful black suit, nothing, with not a speck on your clothes. Fine. Gentlemen, we
be
have
successful.
I was an admirer of the lesson also.
Okay, no, I know, guy. Well, gentlemen, I just want to mention what we do today, Rabbi, and cut to the personal relationship. I hope I've made Lakewood come to life. Jacob, can you feel it? The 1950s, a little bit. Okay. Remember tomorrow's shiur. We continue just where we left off. The students from Lakewood and then Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen lesson. Then for 2 weeks, if anyone wants announcement with the dates, I pick up again January 14th and January 15th. Also, I want to mention this Tuesday. Yitzchak, 1 second. This Tuesday, if you go online for Shvut Ami, a campaign begins Tuesday, the 26th of December, 7 o'clock at 1900 time, our time. And for the next 24 hours, anyone who donates the Shvut Ami, if you give $50, it becomes $200, $100, $400. Three donors have undertaken to match dollar for dollar any donation that is made. The goal is to reach $100,000. Currently, we're reaching out over 30,000 Russian Jews in 45 cities and countries around the world. So first of all, if anyone wants, that's that. Our Torah, This is from Rabbi Mezuzah's Yeshiva in Bnei Brak, a very fine Torah journal. Given out at the Kotel, all the halachot of Kriya, if you haven't been to the Kotel in 30 days. My advice is always go to the Kotel Friday afternoon. That way, most poskim say you don't have to rip Kriya. The latest issue of Hamayan, which makes me cry, because there's an article here taken from Rab Eitan Henkin's, what he left over, scholarship. The article is by Rav Henkin on the Chazon Ish. Very fascinating for me to read the article because I know about the Chazon Ish, but he was killed, the terrorist attack on he and his wife. The price we pay. And he would have gone on to Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin's great-grandson or great-great-grandson. This is against going up the Har HaBayit. The battle is going on because more than ever, Yeshiva Chesda went up with their Rebbeim, and this is Mikdashi Tirau, and this is Loro, the last two issues of Rav Kook on Parshat HaShavua. And this is by Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. It's hard to say Zecher Tzadik Levracha without Rabbi Aaron. The world is not the same. This is on women, a whole talk he gave in the Gush on women and Neirot Chanukah. And I guess everything else I left to give out tomorrow, or let's see. This is very interesting. This is Rabbi Menashe Klein as a youngster giving President Eisenhower in his campaign for presidency, giving him a menorah. All right, this will deal with tomorrow. I would imagine it's all from the internet. Olamam shel Charedim. And finally, with Rabbi Aaron Cutler, a student gave me this in Ranana, listening to my shirim on Rabbi Aaron last week. This is an open letter to Rabbi Emanuel Rackman, who had attacked Rabbi Aaron Cutler. So this is written by Amos Bunin. If you know the players, it's a very, very interesting open letter. And finally, I made a mistake. I was corrected by Richard Rosenberg. For some reason, I don't know why, I quoted Tom Wolfe, and I referred to his book, Vanity of the Bonfires. The real name is, the book is called Bonfire, the Bonfire of the Vanities. And here's my wife's copy. It looks like it's gone through a lot of people reading it. It's about the Bronx. It's a classic volume. Until we meet again tomorrow morning, Be'ezrat Hashem at 9:05 a.m. B'sora tova b'shiv v'nechamot olenu v'al kol Yisrael.
Amen.
Das bedanke.